Molesworth. Episode 2. The Office.
Hello, and may I say what a pleasure it must be for you to welcome me once again into your homes, or cars, or wherever else you listen to the radio at this time of day. Yes, I am Nigel Molesworth, here once again to share with you a few of the wrinkles which I've picked up in my voyage of discovery from that estimable education establishment, St. Custard's, all the way to my current, suave maturity. And what I'm offering today is a few invaluable insights into the world of work. You know, there are all these books about on how to be successful at work, e.g. Viz, The Quarter of a Minute Manager, Take on the World and Win, ect, all pub grabber and grabber executive books at $12.95. Well, forget them. What you'll learn from me is a far greater value in the cut and thrust of the real business world. Now, in fact, it may seem to you that I am not the most obvious advisor in matters of business success. My own achievements in that sphere might appear from the outside to be modest.
That's putting it mildly.
All right. I haven't finished.
Well, I mean, really, Nigel, you've been at the same job in GBH ever since the day you left school.
Yes. Look, I'm sorry about this. I presume you've met my wife, Louise.
I'm not sure that we've ever been properly introduced.
Louise, it's not important. This is meant to be my show.
Yes, but Nigel, you must be truthful. I mean, at work, you're still only a CJ2/B grade, while people 10 years younger than you...
Like Daryl Pacey
have already reached their grade and are well on their way to...
Yes, Louise. I say, Louise, did you know that Channel 4 has got a documentary on about the socio-economic implications of ritual nostril piercing in the Third World?
What? Now?
Yes, now.
Oh.
Well, look, what I was trying to say was that though my actual achievements may appear modest, I can give you a few tips in that most important of business skills, how to get by with the minimum effort. I mean, the thing about work is you mustn't take it too seriously. You mustn't let it dominate your life. Ugh! That's made me think of Daryl Pacey. Yuck! Now, he really does let his work take over. The trouble is, his wife Carol is just the same. The scene is Daryl and Carol's bedroom. Over the bedhead hangs a photograph of our mutual boss, Grint. Daryl has just allowed himself 3 minutes 23.3972 seconds off from the GBH work he's brought home with him to have a bit of sex. Because he's read in the Rising Young Executive Toadies Handbook, Pub Grabber and Grabber at 11:50, that it is important for rising young executives to be sexually fulfilled so that their thoughts do not wander while they are working. He's also read in the same book that sex should be enjoyable.
Oh, Carol, that was enjoyable.
Yes, Daryl, it was enjoyable.
It was almost as good for me as when I was told by Grint in my annual interview that I'd been given a special merit award which raised my grade to CJ2/B+1/SMA.
It was almost as good for me as when I heard that the additional GBH pension scheme's benefit were to be index-linked for all staff above PGT7 level.
When I reach CJ3/A level, it will be tax-efficient for us to have a baby.
Oh, how exciting. We would be able to announce the birth in the GBH House magazine.
Yes, and we could ask Grint to be godfather. And when he's old enough, our son could join GBH at HJGLH/D7 trainee level.
How wonderful. Oh, Daryl.
Oh, Carol.
Oh, yuck. Sorry, suffering from a touch of nausea of the imagination there. As you may have gathered from that disgusting litany, I work for a company called GBH. That stands, in fact, for Grabber Bulk Holdings, and is part of the multinational Grabber Corporation, Inc. Now, there's a name that may be familiar to those of you who have known me from St. Custard's days onwards. Yes, it's the same Grabber. Yes, the one who was head of the school, captain of everything, and incidentally winner of the Mrs. Joyful Prize for raffia work. Now, needless to say, he is managing director of GBH and my boss. But does this mean, I hear you cry, that I still see a lot of him? No, it doesn't. In fact, I see him once a year. Every Christmas at the office party at Grab Your Tires, he hands me a half a glass of South African sherry and says,
Ah, Molesworth, made any holiday plans yet?
And every year I am struck dumb. Should I spell out to him the awful prospect of a fortnight with Louise's mother at Rustington-on-Sea? But every year I'm saved the decision because Grabber does not wait for an answer. He goes on.
I've just come back from 6 weeks in the Seychelles.
Oh.
They're getting horribly spoiled now.
Ah.
Yes, everything's going to the bad these days. Do you know the clock on my third Porsche is losing 1/1,000,000th of a second every millennium?
Oh, really? How ghastly for you.
Oh, it was...
But my words are lost on the desert air. Grabber has wafted on to patronise some other poor peasant. You might imagine, of course, that things aren't as easy for Grabber as they appear. You know, all that responsibility he has to carry. It must get him down, mustn't it? Surely. Not a bit of it. This is how Grabber's average day in the office goes.
11 a.m. Arrive Grabber Towers to meet Japanese clients. 11:15. Leave proles slaving away at Grabber Towers. Chauffeur drives me with Japanese clients to Grabber Castle. Bag a couple of low-flying ptarmigans through the window of the Rolls on the motorway. 1:30 p.m. Lunch of game pie, venison, vintage claret, pre-revolutionary brandy, ect. Various dukes arrive to join in the shooting and snigger at the Japanese clients. 2:30, shoot 370 brace of ducks. 3:00, shoot 439 grice. 3:30, shoot 690 deer. 4:00, tea. 4:30, shoot 1,786 partridge, beaters, estate agents, Japanese clients, ect, until bad light stops play. 5:00, start in on the gin and tonics. 5:30, ring Grint at GBH and get him to check that Molesworth isn't trying to slope off early.
Oh, I don't know. There's no justice, is there? Perhaps I should clarify where I fit into the great GBH business empire. Now, I'm sorry to say that I'm not up at Grabber's grouse-shooting end of the company. I am, in fact, what I have been since I left my public school grunts, a clerical assistant in the invoice docketing brackets internal department. Now, to explain, a clerical assistant means... Well, it doesn't mean a great deal, really. It's just a long-winded way of saying a clerk. And the invoice docketing brackets internal department means... Oh, dear. Quite honestly, it's so... boring. I don't think I've got the energy to spell it out.
The invoice docketing brackets internal department serves the vital function of liaison between the invoice distribution brackets internal department and the invoice redirection brackets external department, with particular emphasis
Thank
on
you.
Interdepartmental reallocation.
Shut up, Darryl! You know, there's one thing I never could stand, it was a SWAT. Met plenty of them at St. Custard's. Not, of course, that Darryl Pacey was at St. C's. Good Lord, no, a product of the him-him state education system, I'm afraid, our Darryl, as is painfully evident every time he opens his mouth. You know, private schools may not be any great shakes academically, but they certainly teach you how to be a snob. Actually, this talk of education brings me on to a very important point, which is that working in an office with a lot of other people is very similar to being back at school. I mean, think about it.
Molesworth's a stinker, Molesworth's a stinker.
No, I'm jolly well not. You give me my ruler back, you pathetic little snot rag.
Shan't.
Then I'll jolly well duff you up, you toady.
Oh, shut up, knit face.
Give me that ruler or I'll beat you into a pulp, you smelly sock.
You couldn't even beat a rotten orange into a pulp, Molesworth.
No, you're too soppy.
Oh, well, am I? We'll see about that. I'm going to get that ruler.
No, you're not.
Hey, chuck it over here.
Give me the Blamange brain.
Shh. Look out, chaps, he's coming.
Shh. What on earth do you think you're doing? Get on with your work!
See what I mean? And it wasn't so very different from that when I was at school. I am, unfortunately, never allowed to forget the parallels between the office and St. Custard's, because my boss at GBH, the head of invoice docketing brackets internal, Grint, does bear an uncanny likeness to my old headmaster, Grimes.
What do you think you're doing, Molesworth?
I was assessing the implications of this new report projecting the annual loss of man hours due to injuries arising from the removal of staples without the use of a proper staple remover.
Nonsense, Molesworth. You were looking out of the window.
Oh, goodness, no, Grint. It's just I happen to have got the report propped up on the windowsill.
Why?
I'm long-sighted.
You've never been long-sighted before.
Well, no. It happened very suddenly, overnight. My optician's never seen a case like it. It makes medical history. He's going to write it up for The Lancet.
You see, I see, and I suppose there's a medical reason why you've got your head propped up on a pile of internal envelopes, your chair tipped back, and your feet on the desk.
Well, yes, actually, there is, Grint. You see, ever keen to improve myself, I borrowed Darrell Pacey's copy of Increase Your Management Efficiency 200% in 10 Minutes a Day, Pub Grabber and Grabber Executive Books at 1795. And in that, it said that more oxygen gets to the brain if the feet are kept higher than the waist.
I see, Molesworth. And maybe you can also tell me why you have a rubber band looped round the thumb and forefinger of your left hand and a paper clip clutched between the fingers of your right hand in a manner which, to the casual observer, might suggest you're about to catapult the paper clip across the room.
Ugh. Ah, yes. Well, you see, we have just had this new consignment of rubber bands in, and I felt it my duty to check their elasticity, because so many nowadays are defective, and the quality of workmanship is so off.
Molesworth, will you stop making all these pathetic excuses and get on with some work?
Of course, the one major problem for all office workers is, how on earth do you fill the day? I mean, at GBH, a callous management has decreed that I should, in theory, be at my desk from 9:30 in the morning until 6 o'clock at night, with only an hour off for lunch. Do you realise how long that is? It's a long time anyway. A long time to fill. Oh, you can cut it down a bit. Lunch at the King's Arms can spread comfortably to 2 or 3 hours, but even given that, filling the rest of the day does really become a test of one's inner resources. And a chap can only bong his Newton's balls for so long. No, I must confess that I'm sometimes even driven to the expedient of doing some work. But only, I hasten to add, after all other avenues have been explored. You know, one thing that always seems to me a bit of a pity about work these days is there aren't many songs on the subject. I mean, in the good old days, as you sat by Old Man River toting your bale or whatever, you used to sing about it. Doesn't seem to happen so much now. Not in GBH, anyway. No reason why it shouldn't, though, of course.
It's hard to keep on smiling when you really should be filing, and you boss man keep on whinging all the day. And the clock that should be ticking seems as if its hands is sticking, and your pension seems a long, long way away. And it's tough to keep on sitting till you wish you brought some knitting or a game of solitaire with which to play. And you drink too many coffees as you sit there in the office, and it's nothing but the money makes you stay.
Makes you stay.
Nobody knows the trouble I've seen trying to pass the buck. When days are looking for someone keen, that is the time I duck. Oh, Lordy, 'cause if you don't move fast, eventually you can get responsibility. And if you don't offload it to some other poor gnome, you can end up taking work home. Oh, I was born tired and weary, and my eyes is getting bleary, 'cause I sat here doing nothing all day. And it's really aggravating, yes, I'm sick, so sick of waiting till the tube train come to carry me away. Build up sweet pension fund.
One thing that does help to pass the time in any office, of course, is lust. And, you know, lustful thoughts will focus on whatever's to hand. Spend the whole day in the office with some woman and whatever kind of boot she is. Come 5:30, your entertaining ideas of inviting her out for a drink and then back to her place, maybe, for a quick coffee and ho-hum. Mind you, in the invoice docketing brackets internal department at GBH, We do have two sex objects worthy of the focus of anyone's libido. And as you sit at your desk, somnolently straightening paper clips, you can take your pick which one you want to fantasize about, if you fancy a bit of class.
Oh, no! I appear to have lost my Philofax.
There's Celia. Or, if you want something a bit more basic...
What?
There's Charlene.
Who?
Charlene.
Who's she?
You.
What?
Charlene is your name.
What? Oh. Yeah.
Of course, with Charlene, you do only get a one-cell brain, but given her other physical allurements, who's complaining? Quite honestly, given a Charlene and a Celia in the office, you are covered for most sexual fantasies that you're likely to require. Sometimes, as the paper clips unfold beneath my supple fingers, I slide imperceptibly into my Deb's Delight fantasy.
And the latest titbit of social gossip is that Nigel de Vere, Chumley, Featherstone, Hall, von Trapp, Battenberg, Sacker, Torter, Molesworth, brackets the right on, is attending the right on Letitia Snordoble's coming out ball at the Dorchester. A group of Sloane Rangers, including Celia, all dripping with family jewels, listen spellbound as he concludes another hilarious anecdote.
It turned out, at the end of the chuckle, that his pony's withers were twisted all the time.
Wah, wah, wah! Yes, Nigel, you are one. You ought to be on the telly box.
Actually, I'm finding this ball a bit of a bore. How about yours, Celia?
Well, actually, I agree.
One did all fancy tootling over to Annabelle's or a quick frisco at the disco.
Wah, wah, wah. Oh, Nigel, you do say the wittiest things. You're so clever.
Not all of you. It was actually only talking to Celia.
Oh, Nigel, you absolute rotter. You are a meanie. You can have me any time.
What do you say, Celia? Shall we dodge the old gossip columnists and just nip off?
Fine. Super. Unless, of course, you'd rather just rattle back to Daddy's flat in St. James's Palace for a quick bit of naughty. You're so sexy, Nigel. So frightfully good.
I don't know, though. I suppose it might pall after a while.
My what?
Pall.
Who's Paul?
Paul's a... Oh, never mind. Now, it has been observed that the relationship between boss and secretary is like a marriage. Well, quite honestly, from my point of view, I hope that's not true. I mean, frankly, being in the office is about the only place that...
Nigel!
Yes, Louise, yes, dear. No, I didn't say anything. Sorry about that. Actually, you can pretty soon gauge how good or bad a secretary is by the way she answers the phone. There are five main methods. There's the properly subservient.
Mr. Molesworth's office.
The disclaiming.
Mr. Molesworth's phone.
The unnecessarily honest.
Mr. Pacey, Mr. Molesworth, and a few other gnomes' phone.
The new temp.
Mr. Moles' phone, things, phone.
And the I should be so lucky.
Mr. Molesworth's lap.
Needless to say, the only person I know who's ever had the last sort of secretary is my appalling brother, Steve. I must move on quickly before fumes of jealousy cloud my senses. Actually, of course, another thing you can do with secretaries, apart from fantasize about them, is actually work with them. Dictating, for instance. Now, some creeps, mentioning no names, of course, but how about Daryl Pacey for starters, do their dictating into little pocket recorders to save time in the office. Well, quite honestly, the fact that people want to save time rather than fill time in the office says all that needs to be said about them as human beings, if indeed they qualify. Now, dictation can be fun. Gives a chap a sense of power. Striding around a room spouting while a secretarial pencil translates his every thought into meaningless squiggles. Do be careful, though. Some secretaries are a bit literal when it comes to dictation. I once worked with one like that, I remember.
Is that all, Mr. Molesworth?
Yes. Would you read it back to me, please?
Yes. From Exeter Extension, well, you know that, to Exeter date. Look at the calendar. Subject this boring, boring business about the recycling of bent paper clips. What shall I say to the slimy toad? Yes, okay, just a minute. I'm going to blow my nose. Right, in response to your memo of whatever date it was, well, I don't know, do I? Perhaps you went against the habits of a lifetime and fired it. No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. Oh, God, please don't cry. Look, here's my handkerchief. Oh, you poor little thing. I'm not really an ogre, you know. If you got to know me better, you'd find maybe if we went for a drink after work. Ooh, you've got nice soft shoulders and lovely hair, and it's a shame to see those tears in the beautiful eyes you have. My wife doesn't understand me, you know. It's a long time since our marriage has been a marriage in more than name, but I get the feeling that you might understand me
Yes, all right. Thank you. Actually, memos are a whole subject in themselves. What you have to remember about them is that their sole aim is to cause maximum confusion. If you have landed in the in-tray of one of your colleagues something that really flummoxes and unsettles him, then your day has not been completely wasted. And though it hurts me to say it, my boss, Grint, is very good at this game. He can really set the cat among the pigeons by unleashing something like this.
From
head of invoice docketing brackets internal
to
head of invoice docketing brackets external.
Subject:
departmental names.
Memo.
I propose that we change the names of invoice docketing brackets internal and invoice docketing brackets external to docket invoicing brackets internal and docket invoicing brackets external, respectively. Reactions.
Signed.
C to TVJ Grint.
Now, this proposal will cause great consternation in the office of head of invoice docketing brackets external, who will be furious that he didn't think of it first and oppose the idea on principle. And he's quite likely, in his reply, to use the time-honoured confusion ploy of extending the distribution list. This has three useful effects. One, it makes the irrelevant people who get copies feel important. Two, it wastes a nice lot of time because some of them will feel called upon to reply. Three, and most important, it really worries the person to whom the memo is addressed. What you get is something like this.
From
head of invoice docketing brackets external
to
head of invoice docketing brackets internal.
CC.
Assistant head of invoice docketing brackets external. Assistant head of invoice docketing brackets internal. Chief clerk invoice docketing brackets external. Chief clerk invoice docketing brackets internal. Assistant chief clerk invoice docketing brackets external. Assistant chief clerk invoice docketing brackets internal. External invoice docketing organiser. Internal invoice docketing organiser. Head of catering, brackets, Manchester. Chief stationery buyer, brackets, Littlehampton. All output monitoring staff. Quality control, brackets, Kettering. Head of brackets. Assistant head of memo disposal. Dispatch coordinator. Sales inhibitor, brackets, domestic. Boilerman, brackets, central premises. Boilerman's dog. Office cleaners.
Well, they're going to read it anyway, so they might as well be put on the distribution list.
Subject:
reaction to proposed change of names of invoice docketing brackets external and invoice docketing brackets internal to docket invoicing brackets external and docket invoicing brackets internal, respectively.
Memo.
No.
Signed,
J.C. Smythe.
The wonderful thing about this kind of memo exchange is that it can go on for months. Actually, before I leave the subject of memos, there's another little trick I would recommend to your attention. It's the unrelated memo, and I can modestly claim it is a pure Molesworth invention. Very simple. It goes like this.
From
in Molesworth.
To
anyone you really despise, e.g. Daryl Pacey.
Subject:
recent proposal.
Memo.
Sure, you know best, but think you may be taking a risk. Still on your own head be it.
Sign
in Molesworth. Never fails. Tee-hee. Receiving a memo like that can ruin someone's whole day. Oh, and incidentally, talking of ruining Daryl Pacey's whole day, a quick rundown on the Molesworth rules for meetings. Basically, let all the gnomes of the world, all the Daryls, do the actual research and do most of the talking. But make sure when you say something that it's telling. E.g., viz, as in this example.
1 milligrams of pencil shavings per day, while the comparable figure for the usage of pocket pencil sharpeners is a staggering 102.87542 milligrams per day. Now, this makes it clear that the greater ease of usage of pocket pencil sharpeners leads to a prodigality in their usage, resulting in 0.32415689921 milligrams of wasted pencil per office per day, and a staggering 0.11353789286533021 loss of man hours per man per day. Now, I think these figures leave no room for doubt that all departments should immediately begin to phase out pocket pencil sharpeners in favour of desk mounted ones.
Thank you, Pacey. If I may say so, a masterly assessment of the situation. Any comments, Molesworth?
I agree, Grint. We must certainly follow Pacey's recommendations, if his facts are correct. That's usually enough to cast doubt on all Darrell's hard work. But don't be content with just saying it. You must also get it minuted.
And could we have it minuted that there is a slight question mark over the authenticity of the figures?
Hardly ever fails, that one. Any sentence beginning, could we have it minuted that, has a strangely soporific effect on people. Nobody objects, and your totally untruthful observation usually just gets minuted. My two other rules for meetings are very simple. A, don't leave around the blotch you've been doodling on. And B, try not to snore. Oh, goodness, you know, I'm really good at these tricks of office life. But sometimes, sentimental fool that I am, I do think how things at work might have been different. And I have to confess that occasionally I see myself as the kind of success I could have been given a different dispersal of the cookie crumbs. I see a huge office in the city, a symphony in smoked glass, tubular steel, rubber plants and walnut panelling. I see two heart-wrenchingly beautiful secretaries avidly awaiting the return of their lord and master from an important business lunch. The office door opens. The rubber plants and the secretaries genuflect.
Oh, Mr. Molesworth.
Mr. Molesworth.
Sorry I'm late. Only once the Prime Minister starts asking me for advice on the economy, I think I'm never going to get away. Any messages?
Robert Maxwell called. He's very worried about your bid to take him over. Asked if you could ring as soon as you came back from lunch.
Let him sweat. I'll do it in the morning. Anything else?
You had a call this morning from the Princess of Wales.
Oh, yes. What did she want?
Well, she said she can't live without you and she can't stand the mockery of her life with Charles any longer.
Right. Could you take some letters?
Yes, Mr. Molesworth.
First one to ICI. No, sorry, I can't take the job of managing director. Copies of that to IBM, Shell International, TWA, National Coal Board, Sony, Thorny MI.
Molesworth!
What? Ah, oh, Grinch, yes.
Will you stop looking out of that window and get on with some work?
Oh, yes, of course, Grinch. I can dream.
More from Molesworth next week, when leisure means watching sport on TV, not playing it. Molesworth was written by Simon Brett, based on characters created by Geoffrey Willens and Ronald Searle. Molesworth himself was played by William Rushton, it says here, Grint by Clive Swift, Louise Penelope Nice, Grabber Bob Sinfield, Darrell Robert Harley, Carol Chrissy Roberts, and Smythe Phil Nice. The producer was Mark Robson.